Discombobulation. Noun. Informal. Mainly humorous, the fact of being made to feel confused or uncomfortable by something.
I'm in a state of discombobulation. Every day I take it in my stride. I tell myself that I don't really care too much, and if it's shit, I'll run away and hide. I'm really scared, of course I am. I'm really scared, of course I am. I'm really scared that this will come to nothing.
In the process of making, episode 9, discombobulation.
If you haven't been part of this story to date, I invite you to go back to episode 1 of the series and take the journey with us. All episodes can be found on the website at sevenwell.org or on all your favourite podcast platforms. G'day, Dave Brown, your host here in the process of making episode 9 of our podcast. Back in 2022, after 2 years of faffing around in this Seven World project, making all sorts of content inspired by the number 7, we, John and I, decided to coerce our accumulated material into a podcast. But 9 months of trying to find a narrative context for our circus of clowns left us bamboozled and deflated. I could have given up. I think most people would have at that point. I kept asking myself, is there anything in this? Oh God, I really don't know. I'm scared that this is just a big waste of time, all of this. But I just can't let it go. I can't let go of this urge, this compulsion I have to see it through. Because there's this equal and opposite counter fear of missing out, that if I don't go the journey, I'll never know whether something worthwhile can emerge from all of this or not. Oh, man.
I'm really scared, of course I am. I'm really scared, of course I am. I'm really scared that this will come to nothing.
Oh, God, it's hard. It's so hard. Ah, look, bottom line though, it's fun. Even if no one gets it, if no one can see any value in it, it's a project that allows me to do all the things I love doing creatively. To write songs, stories, create worlds, invent characters, explore ideas, investigate creativity, learn new skills, engage with new creative communities, learn more about who I am and what I believe in, and yep, wonder if any of it is worthwhile in the end. Oh man, this is confusing.
It's discombobulating, this year process of my making. It's a crazy thing for me to try to do. It's discombobulating, all this work and all this waiting, wearing Seven's name is all this going to.
The Alex Miller Effect.
You know what it was that got me going again? It was that quote from novelist Alex Miller. That quote in which he tells us that he never knows what his novel is until he writes it. What did he say? He said something like, the story reveals itself to him as he proceeds with the book. And the thing I like that he says, it's nearly always a surprise. He doesn't know what's coming. I've got a term to describe this that is part of our creative principles framework. The term is retrospective meaning making, and it's a really big part of principle number 4, which is all about the struggle to find shape and purpose in the accumulation of the content that you've garnered or gathered. And to be honest, discombobulation tends to be a necessary part of the exasperation that becomes the driving force, in a way, inherent in many of the creative processes that I've been a part of. So I'm going to call the solution that I found this time round the Alex Miller Effect, because he got me letting go of my need to find some sort of cohesive concept for our story world, and instead he invited me just to write and to let the story that emerges find its own way. So as you know, I write a story that tossed John, my collaborator, into a fictional scenario that involved Special Agent 7, the Tinsel Man, and a girl with a little black dog. That Wollonga nighttime drive story that we shared in the last episode. And so finally, after those 9 months of discombobulation, our project seemed at least to garner some forward momentum.
Is this really something? Is this really, really something? And I want to make it special because I really, really care. Is this really something? Is this really, really something? And I want to make it special because I really, really care. I want to make it special because I really, really care.
The Port Wollonga story continued.
And so it was on the morning of the strange night before in Port Wollonga that John couldn't sleep. Now awake at 4 a.m. on the morning of his 49th birthday, thinking about his strange hallucination, he could put no other meaning to it. He hadn't said anything to Beck. They were all asleep when he got home, and now here he was, awake, after a night of strange dreams fueled by his drive-time adventure. He told himself to be calm, to breathe, to allow the moon in through the window. Not that he could see the moon anymore, but the idea of the moon he found comforting.
When I view the moon...
Ah, no, he thought. He knew that once a song started to gnaw its way into his brain, the chance of sleep would be zilch.
I cannot help but wonder. I cannot help but wonder who you are.
He was thinking of the girl with the little black dog. What was she doing out there in the middle of the night? He knew he had to get up, otherwise he'd lose it, the song, that is. So John got up and wrote it down. He recorded the snippet on his iPhone. What comes next, he thought. Nothing came next. This little masterpiece was not forthcoming. Great. Awake for no reason on his 49th birthday at 4:49 in the morning. Ha! The sevens again floating around him like flies in the desert at midday. Nice view though, he thought. The ceiling to floor window of the living area framed a vista of the sea, its great lungs heaving to and fro, lit by the warmth of a pre-dawn light that promised the arrival of the sun as she prepared to shed her indigo nightgown turned fuchsia in the dawning of the day. Good enough for her, thought John. Good enough for me. In minutes he was ready to take to the beach for a run. And why not? It was his birthday. A special day for doing special things. Little did John know that his early morning birthday jog along the sand that day would change his life forever in ways he could never have imagined.
So, I'm jogging on the beach. No one around that I can see. It's a beautiful morning. So quiet, it's a bit cold. The early sun is flashing on the surface of the water. And I've got this song floating around in my head. So soon, I'm running in a kind of a trance. I'm describing this because I was wondering if what had been happening to me was part of some sort of weird hallucination or lucid dream. Anyway, I'm running north and reached the rock cluster that divides two beaches. The tide's in, so I have to slow down to maneuver through the rocks. And then I begin running again, and the beach in front of me stretches out for a couple of kilometers to another rocky outcrop that I can see way down in the distance. That's where I'm heading. I'm jogging on the wet sand along the water's edge, and I'm about halfway along the beach when I become aware of a person sitting in the sandhills up ahead to my right. I don't pay much attention at first. Even at this hour in the morning, it's a perfectly sensible thing for someone to be out and about enjoying the day. The person is maybe 20 metres to my right as I run past. I glance up and nod, and in that moment, I become vaguely aware that the person seems familiar in some way. And I'm not sure what it is at first, but then after I've passed, I realize it's the jumper he's wearing. This jumper, it's a woolen jumper. It's got bold red, yellow, and blue bars across it, and I can't quite pin down where I've seen it before. And I glance back briefly to check and then keep running. A little faster, pushing the pace. As I lean into the rhythm of my job, my mind returns to the song that's been trying to find itself. As my feet flip-flap across the wet sand, and I'm singing this song snippet, an image sneaks up on me, and I know straight away where I've seen that jumper. It's Dave's. It's a jumper he wears as part of a character he made up, a character he calls Professor Sevenwell. So I know that jumper. So I'm thinking, that guy I passed back there, was that Dave? Because Dave lives in Adelaide, so it could be him. But I'm sure he said he and his family were going to Kangaroo Island for his 70th birthday. So anyway, I turn 180 degrees, jog backwards for a bit, and I can see maybe 400 metres back along the beach, a distant figure standing on the water's edge. I assume it's the jumper, the maybe Dave. So I stop. I've almost reached the end of the beach, so I choose a flattish rock and use it as a base for 21 push-ups. Take 7 deep breaths, and I start to run back in the direction of the figure. And I notice along the edge of the horizon, there's this broad strip of purpley-violet cloud that's appeared in the sky quite quickly, and it creates that sort of slightly closed-in feeling you get when there's smoke in the air from a bushfire. Anyway, I'm jogging back towards the figure. About 100 metres away, I can see the jumper quite clearly. "Hey!" I shout. "Dave!" He looks up. He smiles. I run to him. "Dave?" I say hesitantly now because I'm not sure. He offers his hand. "A version of him," he says. This is weird. I catch myself laughing. He smiles back, still holding my hand. Then he laughs too, like it's a joke. This whole thing, a setup. "See you on the other side," he says. And he smiles. And there's a moment between us, like a brief nod and a wink, when all this ridiculous absurdity seems okay. Like we both acknowledge the silliness of the whole event. And finally, this is the bit that's going to make you think I'm totally nuts. But I'm telling you that right there in front of me, he fades. Right before my eyes. I mean, that's ridiculous, but I'm telling you what happened, I swear. And as he fades, I see him morph into the Tinsel Man. Yes, the Tinsel Man. The simple stick figure, circle for a head, two dots for eyes, a sort of rectangular shape for the body, and lines for arms and legs, glistening in the air over the water. And there's a tinkling sound, followed by this full-blown cheesy movie moment where there's a strike of lightning and a clap of thunder, and the stick figure just dissolves into a puff of glitter. I kneel and rub my finger in the sand, and it's there on my fingertips, like it was the night before, glinting in the light. And as I'm kneeling there, looking at the specks of tinsel dust on my fingertips, I hear a scrunch of feet in the sand behind me, and I look around, And there's the girl with the black dog beside her. The girl from last night. Morning, she says. The dog's just sitting obediently there. You okay? I'm fine. I say too enthusiastically, because I'm not. I mean, everything feels weird. I pick up a handful of sand and I hold it out to her and I say, can you see the tinsel there in the sand? She looks at it and she says, like she's some sort of professor or something, that's mica. It's a mineral found in sand. Then she holds out her hand and part of me holds out my hand in response and she takes it. I can literally feel part of myself being left behind and the other part of myself is being led by her through a gap. It's the only way I can describe it. Through a gap. And then I'm there. Part of me, at least, almost instantly. Welcome to the gossamer, she says. The gossamer? The haze has thickened. The beach is gone. Everything is velvety violet monochrome, but light and bright with threads of contrasting colour within the vivid ultraviolet luminescence of the landscape. In no way is it gloomy. It's iridescent, like the bottom layers of a rainbow, like the aurora borealis. You know, it's magical. There's soft purple sand under my feet and it sparkles. The mica in the place is infused into the world. It's under my feet. It's in the air. And there, in the center of my vision, shrouded in a veil of purple haze, there's this cottage on a hill in the shade of a giant elm tree. Above the cottage and to one side, I can see the moon. The friendly beaming face of a full moon. The haze playing with its beam as it passes through the leaves of the elm tree, dappling the purple air and displaying its pattern on the thatched roof of the building. It's like a scene from a fairy tale. I don't speak. I am dumbstruck. I simply follow the lead of the girl and her little black dog. She takes me to the door of the cottage, opens it up and ushers me inside. The door closes behind me. The girl and her dog have gone.
G'day, mate.
Dave?
A version of me, yeah. And a version of you.
What's going on?
Our story, mate. This is it.
Your story, mate. What is this place?
Well, I guess you could call it our imagining place. Look, through the window there, see?
Yeah, a tree, a picnic bench, and the moon in a purple world. It's crazy!
Look over there. Look, see the little valley that dips down into the gossamer? That's the dell.
The dell.
If they can make it through the dell, long may they reign in Sevenworld. Remember?
So we're in the gossamer?
Yes.
And over there, through the dell...
is the story world.
Sevenwell. And back there on the beach...
our real lives, the other halves, just getting on with doing that.
How?
Because we're imagining it.
No, you're imagining it.
Well, I'm imagining that you're imagining it too.
Well, what about the girl?
Part of the story.
This is so weird.
Yeah, right? That's just what we wanted. Oddball Odyssey, right? This is it. Just don't overthink it.
Mate, I'm not overthinking it. Except...
what?
Hang on, just let me think. So, we can do anything we like.
Well, it'd be nice if it made some kind of sense to the listener.
We've got listeners.
Well, I think we can get some people to listen to it, maybe.
So the day is here. The seventh day of the seventh month, 2025.
2025, yes. You know, I kind of imagined that when we got to this point... we'd be really clear about where it was all going to go.
So all this time, when you've been saying, just keep on making stuff, John, just keep on making stuff, it'll all sort itself out. So now you're telling me it's not sorted.
Well, I've kind of written 14 episodes, right?
So it's sorted.
Well, no, not really. Look, there's this story world emerging, this Sevenwell alternative metaverse of sorts. And there's our clowns and their story snippets so far. And now the Gossamer, this in-between place. And the fictional parts of you and me, here in this cottage studio of sorts in the Gossamer. And all of our songs and music, the random stuff we've made over the years, related in some way to the number seven. And you know, it was my decision to put all of this together into what turned out to be this podcast. So, yeah, we've got this story engine kind of structure that allows us to sort of play with all the random stuff that we've been making over the last 4 or 5 years.
Oh, so it's all on track?
Kind of winging it, to be honest.
So it's not on track?
Well, let's just say it's kind of ready to continue. We won't know what it is until we kind of do it.
Well, let's just kind of do it then.
Thing is, we are kind of doing it.
Pretty riveting start there, Davey boy.
Yeah, well, stories can be tricky, Johnny, you know?
For dumbasses like us, they can, definitely.
Yeah, well, we're going to have to be on our toes for this, mate. It could get sloshy.
You think I should put my gumboots on?
Man, we're going to need our dancing shoes for this.
Dancing in the purple haze, making so it's all amazing, weaving thread by shaky thread through all our navel gazing in the gossamer. The further we go in the gossamer, the more or less we'll know. Tiptoe through the violet tulips, arabesque in moonlit beams, rock and roll in slowing motion, twist and shout through broken dreams.
Whoa, so there it is. Episode 9. My goodness, what have we done? Where have we landed ourselves? The fictional versions of John and I are now trapped in a purple haze of our own making with no clear roadway of how our circus of Sevenwell clowns will connect with us, John and I, in the Gossamer, or vice versa. I guess that's the perfect embodiment of creative discombobulation. Standing in the middle of your own half-built labyrinth, wondering which walls are load-bearing and which ones you can knock down. Oh, yeah.
It's discombobulating, this here process of our making. It's a crazy thing for me to try to do. It's discombobulating, all this work and all this waiting, wearing Seven's name is all this going to. I'm really scared.
Yeah, but as Alex Miller might say, the only way out is through. Sometimes, no, most times you have to get lost in the forest before you can find your way to something unexpected. So, lost we are, and unexpected are the findings we're coming across. So, until next time, fellow wanderers in the wilderness of creation, may your discombobulation be merely a prelude to discovery. And remember, being confused in technicolor is always better than being certain in black and white.
In the Process of Making is conceived by Dave Brown and John Bode and presented by the Paperboats. Please subscribe to our podcast and recommend it to your friends, lovers, and others, and go to our sevenwell.org website to find out more. Episodes are released on the 7th day of each month on all your favorite podcast platforms. And be watching out for Sevenwell snippets, bits and pieces of Seventological sunshine released randomly each month on socials and available also from the website. And did you know?
When psychologist George Miller published his groundbreaking 1956 paper on human memory capacity, he discovered what became known as Miller's Law,
that most people can hold 7 items, plus or minus 2, in their short-term memory before experiencing cognitive discombobulation. This explains why phone numbers were historically 7 digits long, and why the number 7 appears so frequently in organizational systems worldwide. In fact, when mathematician Alex Belos surveyed 44,000 people about their favorite number, 7 was the overwhelming winner, suggesting that our brains may be neurologically wired to find comfort and meaning in this particular digit, even in the midst of creative chaos. Perhaps that's why our 7-well discombobulation feels strangely familiar. We're just experiencing the universal human fascination with the most popular number on Earth, the number 7.